for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Looking to throw over the middle and into the end zone. Touchdown, Arizona State.
We support each other's teams the rest of the year, but during this game, all bets are off.
That was all Keaton Slovis. Wow, what a play by him.
One man to beat, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, a new NCAA record. Dante Pettis.
Washington State has found a way to move the ball. It's incredible what we're seeing here in Pullman tonight.
Touchdown, Oregon. They fake the handoff. Justin Herbert delivers a dart.
I went to HR several times about how the Duck fans treat me.
Touchdown, Utah.
I mean, this is the Pac-12 we're talking about.
Some way, somehow, we made it to championship weekend, and we have the breakdown for you here on Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network, along with college football analyst Ryan Leaf. My name is Jonathan Rifkin. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. Do us a favor, please hit that rate, review, and subscribe button, as we appreciate all of our loyal listeners and viewers throughout this season. The Pac-12 season coming to an end for the most part. We will have four games to break down for you, including Friday evening's championship matchup between USC and Oregon. Before we do that, though, on Tuesday night, the college football playoff rankings were released. And Ryan, you just told me right before I hit the record button here that, you know, Colorado is in a peculiar situation with the ranking. Why don't you enlighten us a little bit on where you were when the rankings were dropped, what your interpretation of it was, both for the Pac-12 and also for the nation?
Well, I was live on the radio when they broke, so we were almost speechless as to what the top 25 unfurled as. But if you're going to keep Colorado in it at 25, then it's imperative for the Pac-12 conference, the heads of the Pac-12 conference, to then go, okay, the committee's telling us something. The committee's telling us that Colorado is a considerable win for, let's say, USC in a Pac-12 championship. So they had every opportunity to do what's best for the conference once again and give them a ranked opponent, because that was the thing that Gary Barta said was limiting USC right now. And the only reason they only moved up two spots from 15 to 13 was because, A, they hadn't played a ranked opponent, and B, they did not have any game control. They had to come back in the fourth quarter in three of their five games, and that was enough for the committee to simply say, hey, we think the American and the Sun Belt deserve more attention than a Power Five conference, which is, I mean, that is a statement in itself in 2020, that's what the College Football Playoff Committee believes to be true. Because I tell you right now, you put Coastal in the USC schedule, you put Louisiana in the schedule, you put Cincinnati in the USC schedule. All three of those teams aren't undefeated now. They're not. So, but they also looked at Louisiana and said, hey, you beat the number 6 team in the country. You also only lost to the number 12 team in the country by 3 points. You are 13 spots lower than the team that you beat to start the season. It doesn't make any sense. They are absolutely a fraud, I think is the best way to put it. And nothing's going to change. You know, the four that went into this weekend most likely are going to be the four that come out of it. And I've even walked the direction of, if Clemson loses in a tight game to Notre Dame like they did before, watch Clemson be the first two-loss team in at the fourth spot to play Alabama in the first semifinal.
On that note, Iowa State is sixth. They have a handful of top 25 wins, if you're looking at that, right? 18 Oklahoma, 6 Oklahoma. Excuse me, actually lost to Oklahoma State, but they lost by 3 when Oklahoma State was 6. They beat Texas, and they have an opportunity again in the Big 12 championship against the 10th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. Now, if Iowa State beats Oklahoma and Clemson loses, not even a close one, Clemson loses a bad one to Notre Dame, is there a chance that we see a two-loss Iowa State team get in at the fourth spot?
Well, they keep telling us that they love Iowa State. They all of a sudden, you know, this team that would lose to Louisiana and lose to a Oklahoma State team is good enough to get in. I mean, if they flat out look at which is a better loss. Now, the question is, how much do they weigh a conference championship? Well, clearly it's not that much, because they're going to look at USC. If USC is 6-0 and the conference championship's not going to mean enough for them to get to the four spot. So I don't think Iowa State gets in as a two-loss team. I also don't think a two-loss Clemson team gets in. I really don't. But you know, they could prove me wrong with that. I assume what we'll see if Notre Dame is able to beat Clemson for a second time, I would assume we'd see Texas A&M for as much as they've given them credit for. And I've said all along, I think 5 is their ceiling, but the committee keeps telling me week in, week out that they're the 5th best team in the country. And we'll see. They're not going to give Cincinnati a look. They've dropped them back 2 spots, having not played and didn't do so with Ohio State or anybody else for that matter in this process. So it looks like the Blue Bloods, if it plays out, it's going to be that that's the way it's going to go. And unfortunately, I'm going to watch those two semifinals, because they're going to look pretty darn good. And I think the best team that gives Alabama a run is probably Notre Dame or Clemson. And those would be the teams that would be in the fourth spot if Clemson were to get beat, or if Notre Dame were to get beat, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, the nuances here are definitely lost on me, because I don't think that they really matter as much. Like you just said, the 4 teams that have been in top 4 the entire season are probably going to be the 4 teams that get in. We'll get into the national slate of games here to cap off the show. Let's get into the Pac-12. Okay, so let's end this conversation with USC Oregon. Let's give them that courtesy of not sort of pushing first with the championship, but capping the Pac-12 side of things with that. So Utah-Washington State is the first Saturday game. These are all sort of like the consolation games at the end of the season. UCLA and Stanford have already turned down their bowl bids. We'll see what happens with the rest of the conference in terms of the teams that may or may not get them. Utah is projected to win by 10.5. Washington State, we haven't seen in a few weeks. 2-2 Utah, coming off of a very nice win against a ranked number 25 Colorado team, which got stripped of a final game this week because Washington couldn't go. Oregon got put into the championship game, and Colorado is sitting at home drinking hot chocolate, watching the rest of the slate happen here on a Saturday. For you, Ryan, we'll get into the line and what you think is going to happen, but you know, for a young Washington State team, if they could pull off a win, and I know that we have no idea what next year is going to look like, but this team is growing, right? How important would that be just for the mental fortitude of this team in Washington State and Coach Wolovich in his inaugural season to come away with a season-ending victory against Utah?
Well, it'd be huge, but it's a pipe dream. They haven't grown a bit. You know, they've started, they sputtered, they backed up, and now they're looking for some sort of identity. Max Borgi playing would be huge. That would be a huge step forward. But, you know, he's been injured all year long. Do you put him in a game early in the morning in a frigid cold day in Salt Lake City and risk injuring him again when this season doesn't count, his eligibility doesn't count? He's going to be your go-to guy a year from now? I don't know. They have to figure out who their quarterback is, because, you know, they haven't got the right guy there yet. We thought we did against Oregon State, and probably about a half versus Oregon, but it's been a struggle down the stretch, for Jaden DeLora. You know, he was sick Don't forget he had the virus, right? We do not know how this affects people long term. And that could be playing a big part of all of this. But I suspect we're going to see, a bit of a Ferris wheel of quarterbacks from the Washington State Cougars on Saturday. We could see Gunnar Cruz, Cam Cooper coming back home to the state of Utah, and Jaden DeLora on Saturday morning.
Washington State does have, and by the way, we would be remiss in our duties as the Pac-12 host to quickly gloss over the fact that it was early signing period yesterday until tomorrow. Obviously, not all the recruits that will be signing until the conference did sign during early signing period. But to your point, Ryan, Xavier Ward from Eleanor Roosevelt High School, three-star and the 22nd dual-threat ranked quarterback in the nation, is committed to Washington State. We'll see if he's in the mix next season as well. But you're right. I mean, this is now a time, the final game of the season, to get some of these guys an opportunity take some snaps. So you said this is a pipe dream. 10.5 points of the spread, 36 degrees Fahrenheit is the temperature supposed to be at kickoff. I think Utah covers because, again, motivation, it's going to be a cold day, and offensively they've been moving the ball pretty well. We saw against Colorado last week in that second half, so I think they cover this game. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, they beat a Colorado team by 17 points a week ago. So, last time we saw Washington State step on the field, it was 35-0 before anybody could really turn the TV on to watch it happen. So that's the last thing we see. If we're going off the last things we saw, it's Washington State getting just, boot stomped, and Utah doing the same to a college football playoff ranked team in Colorado. So yeah, unfortunately, I'd love to roll with my Cougs this weekend in terms of, against the spread, but I don't see it happening. So the half point gives me pause, but I'm going to take it. I'm going to go Utah minus the 10.5.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Everybody out there, Jonathan has not beat me this year, and it's the last week
to avoid this conversation.
but what I have to do in this moment, I have to disagree with him in a game. Otherwise, I can just roll out the season here and as the ultimate champion once again. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go against one of his picks no matter what. So I give him a chance at a victory this week.
I appreciate that. Means I have to pick first no matter what, because we didn't discuss our picks prior to this podcast being recorded. But I have a feeling, the problem is that I was on a podcast yesterday and I picked one of my picks against my own intuition. And I think I might backtrack here on this podcast and go with a different direction. But we'll get to that. We haven't got to that game yet. Let's move on here. So we both have Utah covering the 10.5 against Washington State. At 4 o'clock on ESPN, UCLA hosting Stanford. Stanford, after a sluggish start, Davis Mills came back after that false positive 2 weeks into the season. I wouldn't say they've been rolling, but they've been improving every week. They're 3-2. UCLA, 3-3. This would be the first season in the Chip Kelly era that they finish over 500. And by the way, I did read a report. I don't know how credible it is, and maybe, Ryan, you could shed some light on it, that UCLA isn't totally convinced or isn't sold on bringing Chip Kelly back next season. Is that something that you have heard with your sources? Because, again, I'm not exactly sure how credible what I read is.
Football scoops sometimes can be credible. I mean, just they tend to know coaching changes quickly and things like that. But they're still the TMZ of the college football world,
right,
to me. So I spoke with their athletic director after this story came out through a friend of mine, and it's absolutely false. He is riding with Chip Kelly. They feel like they improved this year, and they're excited for what next year brings. And I don't know where the names Chris Peterson and Urban Meyer came to fruition for that. Not that they couldn't get either one of the guys. I think Urban Meyer probably could do exactly what he did at Utah and Florida and turn them into contenders, and you get to live in LA to boot. But Chip Kelly's got a handle on that, and if they finish the season here with the victory, I suspect that they'll have a great offseason preparing for next season.
I agree. And also the first time since Chip Kelly came to UCLA that they finished in the top half of the Pac-12 in recruiting. Again, during the early signing period, it's not all said and done. February through March are really big.
But remember with Chip Kelly, you know, he didn't have any of the top recruiting classes when he was at Oregon. It's because he has a niche offense and what they like to do. So he recruits specifically to what they do offensively. And necessarily that doesn't fit with the national narrative of stars or fit. But he knows what he wants and it's worked for him in the past. So he'll continue to do that. He's never relied on how high his recruiting class is. He'll take the bump if it's a top half recruiting class, but it's not something that he actually and his coaching staff go out and look for.
To that point, ironically, and now Oregon's about to have 2 5-star commits in the next 2 weeks, and USC is going to have at least one, maybe even two. Washington is the only team in the early signing period with a 5-star commit. That's Sam Heward, the 5-star quarterback at a Kennedy Catholic in Washington. On my recruiting show, we'll do a little conversation with their head coach about him. But that's just a point of note. This is the first time in the last 5 years that fewer of 3 5-stars have recruited in the Pac-12 in the early signing period. So not a great showing, but like you said, scheme-based recruiting is something that has been more prevalent with some of these programs, as you just alluded to with UCLA. So let's get into this game a little bit. UCLA Stanford, UCLA is a 6.5-point favorite. I like what they've been doing the last, I mean, I've liked what they've done the entire season, right? They could have gone 5-0 or 6-0 up to this point, but they're 3-3. They gave away the game last week to USC in the fourth quarter. Of course, they could have beaten Oregon. They could have beaten, they couldn't have beaten Colorado, but they came back against Colorado. I think that
yes,
they're going to
could have beaten Colorado.
Okay, so then they could have beaten Colorado. And
they don't turn it over 4 times in the first 4 minutes.
They were a hair away from being 6-0, or 5-1, if you will, regardless of those. They're 3-3. Stanford's 3-2. I think that they in UCLA pull out this victory. I don't know if I like the 6.5. I hate these half points, man. The half points throw me because like they could win by 6. I could see them winning by 2 field goals. And so I'm going to give Stanford a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I know that they were practicing in Santa Barbara all week and a little bit warmer than Seattle last week and Corvallis as well. I'm going to give UCLA a victory, but Stanford covers the plus 6.5.
Stanford's the best team in the Pac-12 right now. What they've been able to do the last couple weeks has been unbelievably impressive. And I said this a couple weeks ago. I said, when this is all said and done and the Stanford season's over, you're going to look at that team as one that improved greatly and could be arguably the best team in the conference, if not one of the best teams. And so I think Stanford not only covers, but I think they went outright to finish their year on a very positive note. They're not going to play in a bowl game, and they're going to move on. And I'm hoping Davis Mills comes back and a ton of this senior-laden team returns as well, because they could be a difficult out in the North a year from now.
All right, so there's our disagreement right there. I have Stanford.
No,
covering.
We both picked them. We both picked them.
I didn't pick Stanford to win. I picked UCLA to win.
You picked Stanford to cover.
All right. Okay, so it's a half agreement because you still have them to win.
It doesn't matter. I'm taking Stanford plus 6.5.
All right, we agree on the line. That's at 4 o'clock on ESPN. Let's move over to the 7:30 game, the, quote, Pac-12 after dark game. Arizona State, Oregon State, no Tristan Jebbia for Oregon State. It looks like Jamar Jefferson and the rest of that team, except they did have a wide receiver opt out, is good to go. I still think Arizona State's going to pull that off. It's ASU by 7 up in Corvallis. I give them the cover on the spread. I think as interesting as Oregon State has made these games, I just don't think that they have the talent to really run with Arizona State here, and Arizona State will finish their season at 2-2 because that's just what it's like to play football in a pandemic. You have these weird records to end the season. I think that Jaden Daniels and company end on a high note, and we see them come back bigger, badder, and better than ever in next season.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of tired of hearing about how great Herm Edwards and Arizona State is, and Ray Anderson telling us 3 years ago that we're going to be a perennial top 15 team. And they can't seem to get out of their own way. They just can't. So when do you start quantifying what that looks like. I know a year ago you weren't going to go by wins and losses. Clearly this year you're not going to go by wins and losses either, because you're going to be at 500 or less. You know, is it year four? And you have to be a top 15 team to start the season and finish it in a situation where you're playing for a chance to go to the college football playoff? I would hope so. I mean, I don't know what to think about this. And they didn't look like they knew what the hell they were doing in the last 2.5 minutes against USC. And then in the UCLA game, again, after being away for 3 weeks, they fumbled around and couldn't find their keys. And then last week, Arizona just gave them everything. And luckily for Arizona State, they just embodied an absolute beatdown of a rival that got a coach fired. So, you know, I don't know about this. If you're going off the last thing you saw, you know, Oregon State made it close against Stanford. Like they have all year long, they've made it close with everybody, and Arizona State absolutely demolished a team that didn't look like they want to be out there. I know that Jonathan Smith's team is going to be ready to fight and play. Question is Arizona State capable of doing what they just did a week later?
They don't need to do. They don't need to beat down Oregon State. They just need to win handedly, and I think they can. I don't think Jamar Jefferson's going to make that big of a difference in terms of the score at the final score of this game. I think he's going to play well. Do they really need to go and beat down Oregon State to convince you that they could win this game?
No. I don't care if they beat him down or not. That's not the point. I believe they're sheep's in wolves' clothing. I think everybody thinks they're the badass wolf, but they're just sheep, you know? And until I'm proven otherwise, you know, I just did a whole rant about Arizona State, and I'm going to pick the Sun Devils -7, which I don't quite understand how I went about that. But the last thing I can remember is what they did on last Friday night. So I'm going to roll with that and see if they can win 28-17.
So are you calling? So, I mean, I've been alluding to the praises of Arizona State all season. I said at the end of last season, and we had Matt Berry on the show who completely agreed with me. Are you calling us the boys who cried wolf here if Arizona State is a bunch of wolves dressed as, or sheep dressed as wolves, if you will? Do you think that the hype is too much? Do you think it's overhyped and that they are guilty?
Oh, God, yes. It's way overhyped. I mean, it could be just you and Matt's hype, but I mean, I don't know if that's overhyped or not. I don't think a lot of people had Arizona State being a factor again this year yet. I thought they were going to be able to compete, and the way they went about things in that first game kind of put an exclamation point on what this season has been for not only them, but the Pac-12. But I'm just waiting. You know, we've been waiting for this. They go and beat Michigan State. You know, a year ago in Jaden Daniels' first big road game against a national opponent. Then they beat Oregon and keep them out of the college football playoff a year ago. But then they, you know, seemingly lose games that they shouldn't along the way. So those are growing pains, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I still go back to the Ray Anderson quote that we're going to be a perennial top 15 program. Well, when do we start that clock, Ray? When are we going to start that clock? Year four, I'm cool. If you want to start it at year four, that's fine. But, you know, I've been waiting. I've been waiting for it to
I mean, look, here's the thing. And if you want to take it from a macro recruiting perspective, which is how I do things sometimes, so others may say I do it more than I should. It was sort of the offense was the focus, right, to build up the offense. And they have some very good pieces that they're still developing. They have a quarterback who has had moments where he's proven to be very good, but he hasn't put the consistent aspects of his game together. And next season, they have a bunch of very good defensive pieces coming in. They have, you know, 2 4-star defensive backs. They have a 4-star ATH. They have a bunch of 3-star middle linebackers coming in. So look, I think that they overhauled the offense first. And now they're looking at the defense, and if they can find a way, if Marvin Lewis stays and Herm Edwards can execute and they find a way to put it all together, I think that they would have the pieces to be a top 15 team. But I mean, look, I'm willing to give them the benefit of doubt just because it'll make me look dumb to backtrack after how much I've wanted to believe, and I said I believe in them. But your argument is really hard
to disagree with right now, because you're right. They haven't done anything that they said that they would do on the football field in terms of consistency. They've had some wins. Like you said, they have arguably the biggest non-conference regular season win for the Pac-12 in the last five seasons in that Michigan State game. And yet they still haven't been as competitive as it seems like they should be out in the South and in the conference as a whole. So, I mean, it's tough.
Well, I said this to you, and I've said this on national platforms as well. I think the Pac-12 is overall the most complete conference in the country by far. From top to bottom, any team can beat any team. And a lot of people say, well, Arizona can't. Well, Arizona almost beat USC this year. So, yes, I don't see Vanderbilt playing in a game where they could beat anybody in the SEC. So I don't think from top to bottom there's a better conference than the Pac-12. They just don't have a top-heavy elite group or elite team. And I've talked to some friends of mine that say, I want an elite team. I want a team that's can buy for the playoff every year. And I'm like, I love how competitive the games are every weekend. I just do. I love watching Pac-12 football because they're competitive. Any team could win on any weekend. I'm never, you know, just like, I know for sure this is how this is going to go. And I enjoy that. And knowing what the College Football Playoff Committee is, I don't care anymore. I don't care that if they're a part of it. If we play great football, but I understand how important the playoff is, and we need an elite team. And if we have an undefeated champion who can't go to it, then what's the frickin' point?
Yeah, just enjoy it. I mean, I'm with you. I like the fluidity. I like the consistency. Let me ask you then, if it's the same song and dance with the College Football Playoff year in and year out, with the way that it's approached by the committee, and it's become predictable, and it was predictable this year, and every single media member with a platform after Tuesday night basically all said the same thing. Are we going to see a push to bring back the computers, the analytics, and the BCS,
no.
Or is this is just going to be the system, and we have to accept it?
Yeah, because you know what? As soon as the games get scheduled and the January 1st comes and they play great semifinals and a national champion is crowned and it's most likely going to be Alabama and a rightful champion, everybody's going to forget about what the hell happened, you know?
That's right.
That's exactly what's going to happen, you know? I mean, people talk about UCF in 2017. I don't, you know, not anybody who works in the American Conference's commissioner does. But it doesn't matter. It's you can't expect a group of five team. They were invited into the process. They weren't invited in to be into the College Football Playoff. They were invited into the process where they could play in a New Year's Six bowl game. That's why they were invited into the process. If they wanted to go do something else, they should have made their own, top four where they play a group of five College Football Playoff. And I still think if I were the commissioners of those leagues, I would get together this offseason and say, we're doing our own. We're going to put together our own committee. What's stopping us from doing that? I know we want to be a part of this bigger picture, but hey, let's do our own and make it a big deal. And I don't see why they shouldn't.
I mean, this has been a somewhat subtle topic of conversation for a little while, but especially since UCF's 2017 season, but now it seems more prevalent than ever. We've been alluding to Arizona a little bit. Their game against Cal canceled. Coronavirus all over the place for Cal, and I've heard a couple of cases in Arizona. Arizona's 0-5. I read in the Mercury News, John Wilner, our faithful friend up in San Jose, narrowed down the search in his eyes to just two guys, Joe Salvea, defensive line coach, assistant defensive coordinator for Oregon, and Brett Brennan, former Oregon State head coach who's turned San Jose State around this season. They're a phenomenal team. And it seems like those are really the top two candidates. If you're Arizona, Ryan, who's your preference between those two coaches?
Well, I mean, well, what I'd do is I would hire Brett Brennan, and then I would see if you could get Joe Salovea as assistant head coach and defensive coordinator. That would be a step up from Oregon in a bunch of places. That's how I would try to do it. Now, Joe may not do it because he wants to be the head coach, but I'd get a guy who's had head coaching experience. That job there is, it's going to take a unique way to win games at the University of Arizona. It always has been, all the way back to when Dick Tomey went through the Desert Swarm defense and things like that. So they played that flex defense. It was different. It was something that made them different. And I think it they're going to need to be able to do that to win in Tucson. So that would be like, if I had a wish list for Christmas, it would be Brent Brennan as a head coach because of his head coaching experience and what he's been able to do with a program that wasn't winning any games to get to the conference championship this year. And Joe Salavea, who's a alumnus and who can recruit like crazy, not only every player, but the Asian Pacific and Polynesian kids that he's really, really connected with, especially at Washington State and at Oregon. So that would be my Christmas wish list, is to have that play out. That's the way I would love to see it go. But I don't know if Joe's going to leave a great job at Oregon like that to be the DC at an Arizona school, unless he wants to, he's an assistant defensive coordinator under Andy Avalos there, but getting his own ship, getting his own D, that might be enough that could give him a shot.
Yeah, we'll see once the season ends how that conversation and the coaching search unfolds here for Arizona. San Jose State, I mean, they're in the conference championship in the Mountain West. They had a great game on Friday night last week, a game that you said you were very interested in watching, and they played great. And I believe this is their first undefeated season since like 1967 or something, when they were a top 8 team in the country. Let's move over here to the championship game. It was announced today. Mario Cristobal got extended by the University of Oregon. 6 years, $27.5 million. The dude got a very nice
penny.
Did
he sign it though?
His wife tweeted how excited they are to stay at Oregon. Okay. I haven't heard official news, but Jessica Cristobal did in fact tweet that how proud they are to be.
How would you look? They put the comparison up there. It's about $20,000 less a year than PJ Fleck.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be the comp. I don't know. You're Oregon. You're Nike University. Go to Grandpa Phil, Uncle Phil, and say, "Hey Phil, I need a couple shekels extra to get this done." Because guess what? If we don't hear anything signed by the end of the game tomorrow night, watch out for Saturday morning with a nice private plane from Eugene or from LA down to the plains in Auburn and to kick the tires. Because if Mike Leach at Mississippi State can get $5 million a year, you're guaranteeing Auburn's going to offer Cristobal at least $7 million, and that's $2.5 million more. I mean, if you told me you get to go do what you love to do, and that's coach football, and you also get $2.5 million more to do it, I don't know what you do here. I know what I do here. I go to Auburn.
Well, to your point, Auburn paid Gus Malzahn $6.9 million a year, right? His buyout
was $7.5 million. I bet you the dude would get $7.5 million.
Easy.
That is $3 million more than that's being speculated at Oregon. So
Gus's buyout was $21.4 million. He was getting $6.9 million a year. Now there are some incentives, a couple $100,000 here and there for making various or reaching various milestones for the team over the next 5 years. And by the way, Gary Patterson at TCU is getting paid more than Mario Cristobal. Tom Herman got paid more than Mario Cristobal. Ryan Day.
Well, Tom Herman coaches at Texas. Tom Herman should get $10 million a year to coach at Texas.
Mel Tucker gets more at Michigan State.
Yes. Why do you think Mel Tucker's at Michigan State and not Colorado?
Correct. Mark Stoops at Kentucky gets another $5 million. So you're right. I think that, perceptively, it's an upgrade for the contract that he had previously. Again, his wife tweeted that they're excited to stay and be a part of the Eugene family for the foreseeable future.
What if this dude is two-time Pac-12 champion and is making and isn't the highest paid coach in the Pac-12? Would he be the highest? Who's the highest paid coach in the Pac-12?
That's a good question. I can get that for you right now. I believe it is our friend David Shaw. Well, before this contract, so this would make Mario Cristobal the highest paid coach. David Shaw gets 4.8. And Kyle Whittingham gets 4.6, but that goes up $365,000 every year for the next 3 years. Chip Kelly is the next guy up at 4.3
$3 million. So this would, over the next five seasons, because the contract increases up to $5 million by 2025, eventually Cristobal, with the incentives, would become the highest paid coach in the Pac-12.
Well, you can't complain about that if you're the highest paid coach in your conference, though. It just clearly shows that the Pac-12 is lagging behind in terms of
everything,
who they can get as a head coach. So,
oh man. Anyways, so regardless of the fact that the ink has yet to be placed on or to dry on that contract, his wife, look, we saw Willie Taggart at Oregon right before he got swooped up by Florida State. Oh, I'm so excited to stay in Eugene. And the next day he was on the first plane town to Tallahassee, and now he's cleaning up Lane Kiffin's mess at FAU. But we'll see. We'll see how that trauma unfolds. And I'm sure the PTSD up in Eugene is really...
Why is Lane Kiffin got to have a mess at FAU? He won a championship there.
Because after he left, all the blue chips that he recruited decommitted. They literally couldn't do anything after he left. It wasn't a mess that he created. It was a mess after he left because nobody wanted to go and play at that school. Right. And we saw what happened.
They didn't want to go play for Willie Taggart. They wanted to play for Lane Kiffin.
Exactly. So yeah, it's that whole saga is a separate issue. Anyways, USC, Oregon, the Pac-12 championship that many predicted, we didn't think it was going to happen, and then coronavirus decided to agree with us for once, and Washington couldn't play, giving Oregon the opportunity here to play spoiler to the Trojans down in the Coliseum, a team that they beat 56-24 last year in the Coliseum. Obviously different season, different circumstances, a bunch of different players on Oregon more so than USC. USC is projected to win by 3. The game opened up at 2.5. I think people were very excited about that spread. And because of that, Vegas ended up pushing the line up to 3. USC is the better team. I think it's pretty simple. They have the more skilled athletes, they have a more conditioned quarterback, their wide receiving tandem is better. Oregon has not been very good stopping the run. And last week, guess what? UCLA played the pass in that cover 2 defense, and USC ran the football effectively with Malapaya, and I wouldn't put it past them to do it again. So I think USC covers this football game.
Well, I got taught a valuable lesson a year ago. You do not mess with Mario Cristobal and his chance at a Pac-12 championship. I had to eat so much crow in this situation, and therefore, the Pac-12 is going to Pac-12, and absolutely proved to everybody that a USC team did not belong in the college football playoff. So here's our opposites, all right? I got Go Ducks plus the 3 versus USC
tomorrow night. Fight, and I mean, look, it's with all the utmost reluctance, because what have I done every single week, Ryan? I've taken Oregon, I've taken the spread in any matchup that they've played, and they've been the reason, right? And so I took your advice. My intuition told me that USC, this was the season for them to win the Pac-12 championship, for the national perception to change, and I'd rather be pleasantly surprised as an alumni from Oregon and wrong than disappointed once again in my Oregon Ducks team. So I guess it comes down to we'll know tomorrow night whether or not I finally beat you this week, just because all the other games are on Saturday and we agreed. How do you see this game going, though, realistically? What does Oregon have to do to beat USC?
I assume that it's going to play out a lot like the season had for USC. They're going to look, other than the Washington State game, they're going to look incompetent and look like they shouldn't even be in the game, and then figure it out late and realize, oh my God, we have the superior athletes out on the perimeter. Let's get them the ball quickly. And by that time, it's not going to matter. Mario Cristobal and his team are going to establish a lead of, you know, they're going to be up 24-3. USC will make a rallied comeback, and Oregon will get a late touchdown just to solidify it. 31-27, Oregon.
Oh, wow. All right. I think it's going to be a close game too, I think, but I flip it. I have USC in that round, 31-27. I don't know if they have the gas to come back to make another, for the fourth time this season, a grand fourth quarter comeback, but I expect them to learn from their mistakes and maybe keep it close up until that point when they can do a last minute push to take the victory and the Pac-12 championship. So we agree on every single line here. Now you do have Stanford winning, but there's an asterisk next to that because we agree on the spread of that game, the plus 6.5. So that's the week. I mean, only 4 games, Colorado, unfortunately will not be playing. They finished their season. I mean, we'll see what happens with the final rankings, but they're 25th. And I think for a team with a quarterback and a running back that nobody knew about and a new coaching staff, they did pretty well for all intents and purposes, given the situation.
Pretty well?
They did very well. Excuse my lack of
adjectives. You and I did not have them winning a game this year.
Nope.
So they absolutely killed it this year. They found their head coach. People forget, Carl Durrell took a UCLA team and knocked off the number two ranked USC Trojans to stop them from going to the national championship, and also won a championship down there in the South. He knows what he's doing. And he held on to Darren Cheverini, and they run a great offense. And he did something with Sam Noyer at quarterback. Imagine if they get a true blood quarterback coming in there, and they're recruiting their tails off. You saw something special from them this year, and I'm really proud of that Colorado Buffaloes team. Look for sustained success for that program moving forward, I believe.
I mean, you talk about recruiting their heinies off. Look, right now they're ninth in the Pac-12. After the early signing period, now they have a bunch of guys who are on the books to potentially send in their official commits by February. And that, I think they could push them to the top five of the conference. Right now, you talk about quarterback, Drew Carter is their only quarterback commit. He's a dual threat out of Tigard in up in Portland, Oregon, a team that I saw a couple of times when I was back in my Eugene days. So we'll see. I think that Cheverini is one of those guys that players just want to play for. And I think that, look, they're still in the youth of their coaching there. And they have a very, very solid road ahead out there in Boulder. All right, let's get to the national slate here. Just a kind of a fun fact here. Again, early recruiting period. The top six teams in the early signing period, in this order, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, Clemson, Oregon, are also, ironically, the only six teams to have ever won at least one game in the college football playoff era. So I think that brand has mattered more so this year, especially with LSU, man, and their disappointing season than it has in years past with some of the recruits and the stars associated with them, with the programs that they ended up signing with. Oregon ended up being in the top 10. Other than that, I mean, Utah was at 29. I think USC was at 17. And, I mean, it wasn't a phenomenal showing for the Pac-12 overall, which it almost never is. And as you mentioned earlier, some of these teams, especially UCLA, recruit for scheme rather than, you know, just trying to load up on 5 and 4 stars and hope that talent outweighs, you know, perhaps the cohesive team play out on the football field. But nonetheless, a bunch of interesting games with a lot of implications, depending on which way you go. What on the national slate, Ryan, are you excited about, and what should we all as college football fans be aware of in terms of implications this upcoming weekend?
Well, I think it's a great, great Saturday of championship football. You know, I really do. Northwestern, Ohio State, I think, you know, Ohio State's 20-point favorite. You know, if they win, they're in. That's all there is to that. If they win, they're in. I want to see how, you know, Texas A&M has to put a thrash. If Texas A&M puts a thrashing on Tennessee, and Clemson turns it around and beats down Notre Dame, that may be enough leeway for the committee to say, hey, A&M's in over a Notre Dame team. I don't believe that. I believe Notre Dame's in no matter what, but I've heard some people talking about that aspect of things. So I'll be looking for that. I really look forward to the Louisiana-Coastal Carolina game. It's a rematch from earlier in the year. Both teams are playing really good football. Louisiana finally got over the App State hump. That's the one that just held them back for the last 2 years. They got past that a week ago, and now they get a chance to be Sun Belt champions. Billy Napier has doubled down on his investment with the Raging Cajuns, and I think he's just the right guy for the job. Boy, they do a heck of a job there. And then I think the best game of the whole weekend, Clemson-Notre Dame again. I thought it was the best game of the year so far. And I'm hoping we get another great one. And I think we will, because I think they're two of the most complete teams in the country. And I talked to Coach Sweeney this week, and he said, you know, we have all our horses back, which is a big factor. And he said, we're ready to roll, and we're going to throw everything we got at them. So that's their mindset right now. I don't think I could bet against them. They are – I can't believe they're 10.5-point favorites. I would probably – if I was a betting man out there, I'd take Notre Dame plus the 10.5, definitely. That's a lot of points in a game where I think these two teams are pretty evenly matched. You know, and then, you know, I don't know how much I want to watch the SEC championship. I will, you know. Florida for me just seems like, you know, somebody that, oh, you know who Florida reminds me of? Oregon. A team that just kind of slides into a championship game.
Yeah.
And there's no really reason why they should be in it. That's what this game kind of feels to me. So I kind of hope Alabama hangs like a 60 burger on them. 63-7 would be an awesome, awesome day for Alabama, in my opinion. And then the Tulsa-Cincinnati game, of course, just, you know, what we haven't seen Cincinnati for a couple of weeks. They've dropped further and further down the rankings. Tulsa has been pretty damn good defensively. So I think this could be a good game. Friend of the show, Greg McElroy, is going to be on that call. So it's going to be a fun day on Saturday. That's all I know. A lot of great football. I'm going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it as well. You know, one conversation we've never had here, Ryan, and I'm curious to get your take on. So this whole Jackson State University saga, right? The FCS school that hired Deion Sanders as their head coach, you know, they actually have a marquee win in their program's history. They beat Auburn a couple years back, a top 25 Auburn team. I think it was like 2014 or something, a couple years back. And that's sort of the resume. But they ran, you know, all the recruiting sites, 24/7, ESPN, Rivals. They all ran sort of this analytic test on the recruits that Jackson State has and the transfers that they're getting for next season. There are 135 FBS programs. If you took Jackson State out of the FCS and you put them in the FBS, they would have the 121st ranked recruiting class. And they have 2 4-stars, by the way. Now, one of them is Deion Sanders' son, Shador Sanders. But for a program like this, where they have a big name head coach, they're not a program that's obviously known nationally. They're an FCS school. They're not North Dakota State, right, who a lot of college football fans know about just because they consistently win the FCS and also take it to FBS programs every year. I mean, is this a program in Jackson State under Deion Sanders that is actually trying to make a push to move up to the FBS based on the recruiting classes and maybe going out and just trying to kick ass in the FCS every year? Or is this the first play for Deion Sanders to try and get on the coaching radar to eventually move up into a bigger and better spot as a coach?
I would expect that's the case, the latter. But he's got to perform. I mean, he can get recruits there, but if he can't put them together as a team and make them function and win, you know, he's not going to get a look. I mean, don't forget Jim Harbaugh started out at the University of San Diego, right? It was a non-scholarship university. That's where he started, and he just won games and developed great offense and then got the opportunity at Stanford. That's how it worked. So if Deion was not getting the looks that he needed, this was a step for him to say, hey, okay, I'll show you what I can do at a historically black college and recruit my ass off and put together a winner. And so, yeah, I expect that to be the case. I don't think if he continues to get great recruiting classes and wins for a couple years that he's not going to get a look elsewhere. And then it might be a package deal at that point, him and his son, right, transferring to a bigger Division I program. We'll see. You know, it'll be exciting to see what primetime looks like as a head coach because, you know, don't forget, for his whole career, he won in places, but he played a position that wasn't necessarily a team oriented, right? He played a position where he got to be on an island because he was so darn good and it was all about him. Now he's coached here recently at the high school level and he's raised kids and has a family and all of that. So I suspect that it's going to be a different perspective, but that's something I would look into just, especially when things go bad, right? You know, that's always the defining factor of things. When things kind of start to go bad, all of a sudden you lose 3 in a row. You know, how do you react? You know, what does that look like? So it will be a very interesting microscope that will be displayed on Jackson State this next year. And I, for one, will, of course, be interested. But he's going to get kids to want to come there. I know that.
I completely agree. I mean, they have the 15th ranked quarterback in the nation currently committed. And they have the number one junior college transfer
committed as well, and he's a defensive back. So you're absolutely, and they have a bunch of West Coast kids. They have two guys from Nevada and a guy from San Diego. I mean, they're not just scaling the recruiting to the South. They're trying to hit it nationally. And if he can build something up there, I agree. I think it'll be interesting to see, number one, how he puts it together there. And number two, if his tenure at Jackson State is really short lived, and he, and like you said, his son end up finding their way to a bigger and better Division I program at the FBS level. All right. Well, I guess that's it. I guess we will be back actually on Sunday, folks, on Sunday morning when the College Football Playoff Committee announces, has their big reveal show. Remember last year we did a Periscope Live on Twitter. We're going to do another one. It's going to be, we'll probably do it on, we'll figure it out, Ryan. We'll figure out the Twitter account. We'll make sure that we get the information out there ahead of time for you, but make sure that you are ready to go on Sunday morning. Follow Ryan. Check, I mean, if you want, check out my Twitter, and we will make sure to have you covered as the live reveal show for the College Football Playoff Committee, and then we will do a Pac-12 roundup as well early next week. And yeah, enjoy college football. It's going to be a really fun weekend around the Pac-12. We'll see if Oregon can spoil USC's chances, and if I can maybe get a victory here on the final week of Pac-12 play against the most formidable opponent in Guess the Lines here on the show, Mr. Ryan Leaf. Ryan, before we sign off here, I'm sure that you have a busy time over the next, you know, week or so on air. What is your schedule? Where can people listen to you?
Yeah, you can continue to listen to me on ESPNU Channel 84 and Sirius XM, as well as the Pac-12 channel 373. In the mornings. Coming down the stretch here, not too much more of college football, but we'll be rolling into college basketball in the Pac-12 here soon. I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully we'll get, you know, a semblance of a season there as well. But I wouldn't be surprised. I know it can't happen because of the monetary issues with college basketball, but wouldn't it feel good if we just saw everything kind of shut down until next fall?
Yes.
We thought that was going to be the case when it happened last March. I think people are happy we're through the college football season, even though it was arduous, you know, and difficult. I think there's a sense of accomplishment to having gone through it. So maybe basketball will feel the same way.
Well, all of that remains to be. Pac-12 basketball, very interesting. Some very bad losses in the conference up to this point, but some good wins as well. And Ryan and the Pac-12 crew will have you ready to go on all of that as well when Pac-12 football is over. But until then, we'll be back on Sunday morning for the live reveal show and then early next week for the Pac-12 wrap-up. Until then, for Ryan Leaf, my name is Jonathan Rifkin signing off. Thank you so much for listening. Please, once again, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. This has been Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.